Good afternoon, everyone, and again, welcome to services today, and hope that everyone has had a good week. The sermonette today that I want to give you is entitled Reading Right Over Things. When we read the Bible, we may just read right over things. Oh yes, we may think that we understand what is written, but there are things that need thought, maybe even further study, in order to get more meaning than we may at first have thought. In fact, with some matters, we may never really understand fully what is written. Let us briefly look at first at an example that we have only understood since becoming a member of the true Church of God. Genesis 1, verse 1 and verse 2, we read the following, but you know it so well that you've no need to turn there. I'll just read it. It says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." We have long understood in the church that there is an enormous amount of time between verses 1 and 2. Now we know that, but it may be new that new members to the church would probably not know that, and most of mainstream Christianity is the same, and the rest of the world probably couldn't care less. They would read right over this, but we have been privileged to understand the deep meaning of these two verses. So let us now look at three examples. In Luke 2 verse 8, again, you no need to turn there, but it does read as follows. "Now there were in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night." As we know, this verse is part of the Christmas story and the 25th of December misunderstanding, to put it nicely. When I look at my inspired margin, I have written there Ezra 10, verses 9 to 13. Let us read this short passage, if you'll turn there. Ezra 10, verse 9. Ezra 10, verse 9 says, "So all the men of Judah and Benjamin gathered at Jerusalem within days, 3 days. It was the 9th month, on the 20th of the month, and all the people sat in the open square of the house of God, trembling because of this matter, because of heavy rain." Verse 10. "Then Ezra the priest stood up and said to them, 'You have transgressed and have taken pagan wives, adding to the guilt of Israel. Now therefore make confession to the Lord God of your fathers and do his will. Separate yourselves from the peoples of the land and from pagan wives.' Then all the assembly answered and said with a loud voice, 'Yes, as you have said, so we must do.'" Verse 13. "But there are many people. It is the season for heavy rain, and we are not able to stand outside. Nor is this the work of 1 or 2 days, for there are many of us who have transgressed in this matter." Now, whilst this was about strange marriages and foreign wives, the inclement weather in the 9th month of the Hebrew calendar, the equivalent of December for us, is clearly shown. This again brought to my mind details about the weather in that part of the world in December. Jerusalem is only 5 to 6 miles from Bethlehem, and they enjoy the same weather. I've been in Jerusalem at that time of the year, and it is cold, and when I was there it had some snow. It's very easy to read Luke chapter 2 about the birth of Jesus in verses 1 to 7, and as mainstream Christianity celebrates Christmas on December 25th, verse 7 reveals something that could not have happened in late December in Bethlehem. Ezra 10 is very informative and helps us to understand the error of believing the birth of Jesus was about 3 months different to the time it actually occurred, when it can be conclusively proved that Jesus was actually born in late September or early October. Luke 2 verse 8 is a good example of reading right over things without using information from another part of the Bible which helps to explain it. Secondly, let's look at John 2, verses 1 to 11. John 2, verses 1 to 11. This is about the wedding in Cana of Galilee. John 2, verse 1. On the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Verse 6. Now there were six water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water," and they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. When the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and did not know where it had come from, but the servants knew who had drawn the water, the master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now." This beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. Now let us think about this and look at the logistics. Verse 6 says six water pots at 20 or 30 gallons apiece. So let's take the smallest number. Let's take 20 gallons times six water pots. That's 120 gallons with 8 pints to a gallon. That's 960 pints of wine, almost 1,000 pints. So let's assume six glasses to a pint. That's approximately 6,000 glasses of wine. That is the minimum. It could have been half as much again if we had calculated 30 gallons per water pot. Now this was after the initial good wine had been drunk, as it said in verse 10. So could it be that a similar amount of wine was made available? If so, there would have been 12,000 glasses of wine, minimum. Furthermore, marriage could have gone on for several days. I'm not going to turn there, but you might like to make a note of Judges 14, verse 17. This was Samson's wedding, and it says, "Now she had wept on him the 7 days while their feast lasted." How many guests were there? It doesn't say, but if there were between 12,000 and 18,000 glasses of wine to drink, it's fairly obvious that this was a big event, with probably many hundreds of people attending. Now we can read right over this when we don't think through what happened. We can deduce the following. The amount of wine was enormous. The wedding feast could have gone on for several days. It was Christ's first miracle, and we can overlook the magnitude of the miracle. And for those who only think that grape juice was produced, just look at verse 10. If the wine had absolutely no effect, then why keep inferior wine until the guests have well drunk, meaning that they wouldn't be able to tell the difference? There is so much to this story and so many others that we shouldn't just read it, but thoroughly think through and understand what we are reading. The third area today is God knows the names of all the stars. Please turn again to Psalm 147, verse 4. We've used this before, but we can read right over this as we may move on to further scriptures without pondering the sheer magnitude of the wonderful capabilities of our great God. This, to me, is a staggering piece of knowledge. It is beyond the understanding of men. Psalm 147, verse 4. He counts the numbers of the stars. He calls them all by name. Now let's get some information and understanding about this. I don't know about you, but my memory can be so poor. But here we read that God counts the number of the stars and counts them all by name. Taken from the website Universe Today, it gives us some mind-boggling statistics as follows. According to astronomers, our Milky Way is an average-sized barrel spiral galaxy measuring up to 120,000 light-years across. Our Sun is located about 27,000 light-years from the galactic core of the Orion Arm. Astronomers estimate that the Milky Way contains up to 400 billion stars of various sizes and brightness. There are spiral galaxies out there with more than a trillion stars, and giant elliptical galaxies with 100 trillion stars, and there are tiny dwarf galaxies with a fraction of our number of stars. It continues, so how many galaxies are there? According to astronomers, there are probably more than 170 billion galaxies in the observable universe stretching out into a region of space 13.8 billion light years away from us in all directions. And so if you multiply the number of stars in our galaxy by the number of galaxies in the universe, you get approximately 1 followed by 24 zeros. That's a septillion of stars. But there could be more than that. This is a minimum value. The universe could be much bigger. It's just that we can't ever detect those stars because they're outside the observable universe. It's even possible that the universe is infinite, stretching on forever with an infinite number of stars. So add a couple more zeros. Maybe an infinite number of zeros. That's a lot of stars in the universe. Now, I know that I've used these sort of figures before in messages, but they are staggering and worth repeating. Truly staggering, but this website also states it defines the amount of the universe that we can see, because that's how long light has taken to reach us during the Big Bang, or since the Big Bang. This website shows how incomprehensible it all is and then says that no creator was involved. It all just came out of nothing. Intellectual, clever people spouting absolute nonsense. This is the sort of stuff our children are being taught in schools today in an ever-increasing secular society. But the important thing to remember is that God counts the number of the stars. He calls them all by name. More than a septillion, maybe many more. One followed by at least 24 zeros. He knows them all by name. Just think about that. It is an absolutely staggering feat. And that comment is very underwhelming. Such an incredible situation that God has such capacity that we have no idea the real extent of it. And we can read right over it as we move on to the next verse without stopping to think of the tremendous and amazing capacity of our great God. In conclusion, it is much more beneficial to our spiritual well-being if we read, think through, and understand the scriptures we're reading. By using our inspired margin, if we have one, as well as other Bible aids such as a concordance, dictionary or commentary, plus the teaching and understanding that we have been privileged to learn in the Church of God, we will really profit from greater understanding, and all the effort will be well worthwhile.